Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com.
Hey everybody, this is the Josh Meister, and we are just about to discuss episode 7 of season 5 of Lost. The episode title is The Life and Death of Jeremy Bentham. And as the title pretty well states, it was a sort of a flashback episode for the most part. We got to see a lot of what happened with John Locke after he left the island. Pretty much the whole story of after he left the island all the way up until his return to the island. Very good episode. I haven't really looked to see, you know, on any of the polls or anything like that, what people thought of it. But I imagine probably most people really liked this episode. All right, I'm going to just jump right into the notes from the pop-ups in the recap episode, the rerun. There were actually some more interesting things in the pop-ups today than there usually are, it seems like. But one of them said that the lagoon where we saw Hurley in the water when he was screaming for Jack at the beginning of the last episode, and where Kate was lying on a rock and all that, they said that that was the same lagoon as the season one episode, Whatever the Case May Be. That's the episode where Kate and Sawyer went swimming. So presumably there's still some nasty, bloated bodies or at least skeletons, I guess, by now, down in that water. That's kind of gross. But interesting, though. I mean, I didn't recognize that as the same lagoon when I was watching the last episode. It looked like a new place on the island we hadn't seen before, but it was kind of interesting to see that. And Diesel says that's where Paula found the diamonds. Let's see, another pop-up. They said that the name of the lamppost station was inspired by the lamppost in the Chronicles of Narnia. And they actually had mentioned that on the Lost Cast podcast as well. They're kind of certainly some similarities in the plot between Chronicles of Narnia and Lost with, you know, entering this whole different world where time is completely different and things like that. So that's, I guess, what that's a reference to. There was another pop-up that said that the Dharma Initiative used old sailing journals like the one from the Black Rock to be able to try to find the island. And that I found interesting because, of course, we know that Charles Widmore, and they also pointed this out in the pop-up, that Charles Widmore got a hold of the Black Rock journals in a previous episode. So it was kind of interesting to find that out, that the Dharma Initiative also used the same methods of finding the island using the same Black Rock journal that Charles Widmore later won in an auction. This was kind of probably the biggest reveal at least the one that confirmed something that we had been wondering about when watching 316. There was a pop-up that confirmed that Ben was going to fulfill his promise to Charles Widmore to kill Penny. So that was the deal with, you know, he said that he had something that he had promised an old friend that he was going to do. And so that was what Ben was talking about. He was going to fulfill his promise to Charles Widmore to kill Penny. And, of course, we don't know the outcome of that yet. Some people have pointed out that they thought that it looks like the blood that was on Ben was maybe somebody else's blood that had spattered on him or something like that. But we also do know that Ben definitely had some bruises, you know, when he boarded the plane. And, well, okay, Alex the Other in the chat says, I think that was more of a reminder than confirmation. Well, true, but I think just the fact that they reminded us right then was pretty much confirmation that is what Ben set out to do. And I don't think it's going to be just as simple as he killed Penny and that was it, you know, and Penny fought back or something like that. I think there's going to be quite a bit more to that story. When Jack got the phone call from Ben and we saw Ben at the Long Beach Harbor, we definitely saw Ben visibly shaken. He wasn't, you know, normal, nonchalant, okay, I just killed somebody, like we just saw in this episode, Ben. He was very different. He was shaken up. And Bailey Bear in the chat says, I hope Widmore was there to beat him up. Yeah, after the last episode, I was kind of thinking maybe it was Desmond, but I could see it being Charles Widmore, too. That wouldn't surprise me, because Widmore also knows where Penny is at the moment because of having sent Desmond and knowing that, you know, that Penny was going to go wherever Desmond went. Yeah, that's a good point. Diesel929 points out that Widmore can't kill Ben according to the rules, and he also says Desmond, I think, would have killed Ben. Yeah, that's a good point. I'm sure we'll probably see what happened in maybe the next episode, or at least in an upcoming episode, when they get into explaining, you know, all of the mysteries of why people got on the plane and kind of all the background other things that happened that we didn't see in last week's episode 316. K-Jax says it would be great if Penny beat the crap out of him. You know, another thought that I had, I don't have this in my notes, but I guess I could write it down while I'm thinking of it. You know, the thought kind of crossed my mind that maybe Ben would have gone for a more easy target, and maybe he actually went after Charles' grandson, Charlie. And, you know, I don't know if there's really any evidence for that, but, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting, though. There was another pop-up. Kate Jackson's Charlie beat the crap out of him. Diesel929 says the same thing that I kind of was thinking too, along the same lines, that would give Desmond a reason to go back to the island. If Ben had come after Penny to try to kill Penny, or had come after their child or whatever, even if he didn't succeed in killing them, if he laid a finger on them, you can guarantee that would get Desmond to go back to the island. So my theory is that Desmond is going to approach Eloise Hawking and say, you've got to find me another window so I can get back to the island so I can go kill Ben. Ajax says, it sounds like Des is destined to go back. And that's certainly how Eloise Hawking was talking. All right, there was another pop-up that explained a little bit more about the comic book that Hurley was reading in the airport. We mentioned on last week's podcast that it was an issue of Why the Last Man, which is a comic series written by Brian K. Vaughan, who's one of the Lost writers, we mentioned last week. They didn't point that out in the pop-up, but what they did point out about it is that the comic series is about a plague that killed all male mammals on the planet. So we didn't specifically mention that last week. I was trying to look things up about that specific issue that Hurley found, or heard that Hurley was reading in the airport, I should say. But that's kind of gives an overall synopsis, I guess, of this comic book series. It's about a plague that killed all male mammals on the planet. And I tying that in with what we learned last week, Yorick, I guess, is the man who is the one lone survivor. All right, that's all the notes that I've got from the pop-ups for last week's episode. There were a couple of interesting things from the past couple of episodes of Lostcast. I hadn't had time yet to listen to the Lostcast show for This Place is Death by the time I was recording last week. So first of all, I'll jump back a little bit and talk about some of the interesting things they pointed out from This Place is Death. They pointed out that the sickness that Danielle referred to is not the same as the nosebleeds. And they point to the fact that, you know, Robert and the others apparently had gone crazy. You know, Robert tried to kill Danielle. She knew that he wasn't acting right, that he had changed somehow, and sure enough, Robert tried to kill Danielle. And so that's the sickness that Danielle was talking about. So it's not the nosebleeds, as I thought perhaps it might have been, and I'm sure other people have kind of speculated about too. That was a good point that they had there. They also talked about how John Locke had a similar experience to the experience that Montan had, where he was dragged into a hole. Locke wasn't pulled all the way down inside, but they did point out that Locke had a similar interaction with the smoke monster compared to the Montana being pulled down the hole. And so the question is that they posed is Locke sick? Does he have a sickness? Is that why he's, you know, so wrapped up in the island that he would do anything for the island? I don't think that's the case, but I thought that was kind of interesting to point out anyway. Right, Bailey versus Locke never went down the hole. Right, his legs were kind of pulled in, but his whole body, you know, he wasn't sucked all the way down the hole like Montand was. Another point from Lost Cast, they asked, now there's actually kind of two different theories. One comes from their episode when they were talking about this place is death. They also had another good one, another good theory about the same thing in their podcast about 316, which I'll mention in a minute. But they suggested that maybe Charlotte's adoptive mother from the island was of Korean descent, and that could explain why Charlotte spoke Korean. They also talked about Charlotte's line, "Don't bring her back," and I think most people probably assumed that Sun was talking about, or that Charlotte was talking about Sun, but they brought up the theory that perhaps Charlotte was referring to Ji Yeon because she was conceived on the island. You know, she may be special in some way. Interestingly, I mean, this, you know, without getting too sidetracked, it's kind of interesting how, you know, Aaron was conceived off island, born on island, and then we've got Ji Yeon, who was conceived on island and born off island. They also, you know, kind of related to that, I get a little bit. They also gave a, you know, threw out the theory that Adam and Eve, if you remember way back from season one when they found those two dead bodies in the caves, that maybe Adam and Eve that they found in the caves are Aaron and Ji Yeon. I don't know if there's any evidence for that, but I thought that was kind of interesting anyway. They pointed out that there was, with a painting of Thomas, doubting Thomas, you know, needing to have faith in the resurrection, that Jesus had been resurrected. I kind of pointed out something a little bit different about the painting. The thing that they saw in the painting was sort of evidence. I looked at it as pointing out resurrection theme, that, you know, this is going to be something that, you know, I thought they were giving a big shout out, kind of saying, hello, you know, Locke is going to be resurrected. Here's a big clue. And Lost Cast, you know, when they were discussing it, they didn't mention, I don't know if they really mentioned much about resurrection, but they did say that they thought that the painting was more about needing to have faith. And really, both of those kind of fit in the context of what Jack was going through, and the context of the episode and what is, you know, coming up. So I guess it could be also foreshadowing the resurrection, but they had a good point that it was also really the point that Ben was trying to make to Jack, I guess, was about needing to have faith. They also discussed whether someone on the island may be Daniel Faraday's father. Ellie, you know, who, again, we've kind of jumped to the conclusion maybe a little bit that Ellie is Eloise Hawking, and that the reason that Dan Faraday, you know, thought she looked so familiar was because it was his mom. And so they brought up the theory that perhaps someone on the island might be Daniel's dad, and that person could possibly be Charles Widmore. And I thought that was kind of an interesting theory. Yeah, Diesel agrees that Ellie equals Eloise is a very strong possibility. I would agree with that. All right, and Lost Cast, when they were talking about 316, they pointed out that Jin had a new Dharma logo, one that we hadn't seen before, on his jumpsuit. And I'll paste a link to this in the chat, and also, of course, I'll have it in the show notes on the blog when I post this podcast episode. But it's kind of interesting that there's a brand new logo here. It sort of looks like a sheriff's star, and that, of course, there's Dharma in the middle of it. So the theory, you know, or the idea that I guess we're supposed to get is that this is a that this Dharma logo has to do with, you know, the security guards, people who are guarding the island. Hence, you know, Jin with his gun getting out of the vehicle when he saw that there were other people who were unaccounted for somewhere on the island. So I guess Jin is working in Dharma security. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's a Dharma station for security or anything like that. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. So you can find a link to that, or you, by the time this podcast episode is posted, you'll be able to find a link to that on my blog. On Ajira Flight 316, they said that Sun could have been a proxy for Rose. She was holding her husband's ring like Rose was. And if you remember, Rose was kind of, you know, worried about her husband, and she was holding Bernard's ring for him because his his fingers swelled up when he flies or something weird like that. And so in this case, Sun was holding her husband's ring on the plane. Now, I don't know if there's any proxy for Jin. That was one thing that I couldn't quite figure out when I was kind of thinking back on the episode. But Alex, the other, points out in the chat that because Jin has been on the island, you know, working with Dharma for all this time, you know, what's it been, like 3 years, I guess we're supposed to assume. I don't know. But Alex, the other, says he's going to speak good English, which certainly... That could definitely be the case. At this point, you know, Jin is probably going to be fairly fluent if he's had that much exposure to English and, you know, been speaking it all the time and nobody to speak Korean with. That would make a lot of sense. So, and I don't remember whether Lost Casts gave this theory. I think they did. I wrote it down when I was listening to them anyway. But as I mentioned, they in the previous episode when they were talking about this place of death, they said maybe that Charlotte's adoptive mother spoke Korean. Well, here's another idea that they also suggested in the discussion of 316. They said perhaps Jin taught the Korean language to Charlotte after he was living among the Dharma people on the island. And I really like that theory. That, to me, seems to make the most sense out of anything else. And it also is really funny if you think about it that, you know, Jin taught Charlotte Korean so that she would be able to translate for him in the future. It's kind of a little bit of a, I don't know if I would say it's a paradox, but it's just funny that sometimes they can go back and change time and sometimes they can't change time no matter, you know, they can't change the past no matter what they do. It's just very funny. Diesel99 also suggests that maybe Charlotte is the daughter of a very high-up Dharma operative. That would seem to make sense to me because of the fact that she knew about the well. And, you know, to me, that seems like it would be pretty privileged information. So that's a good point, too. But interestingly, though, she did not. Even though she recognized Dan Faraday, you know, Charlotte recognized him before she died as "You're that crazy guy who came back to tell me to never come back to the island." But what she didn't notice, apparently, was that it was Jin who had taught her Korean. If that turns out to be true, which I would suspect is going to be the case. All right. So let's plunge right into this week's episode, The Life and Death of Jeremy Bentham. We start out the episode on the island, and Caesar is in the Hydra station, the Dharma station that's on the little island next to the main one, and he's looking at maps of the island. There's some screen caps of that, and the maps that he's looking at apparently are Daniel Rousseau's maps. Another thing that he's looking at is apparently a page from Daniel Faraday's journal, which is interesting too. And apparently it's one of the pages that kind of is trying to explain time travel and all that kind of thing. We see Caesar loading a shotgun, or at least he's checking the shells, and he puts it in his bag, and then Alana, you know, walks in. And he says, "Oh no, I was just putting this flashlight in my bag, see?" So there's already this level of distrust between them. And I'm not really sure, like, what Caesar's deal is. Like, it's kind of funny, like, the way that they started the episode. I mean, they're showing you this character that, you know, that probably most casual watchers of the show don't recognize as being the guy who talked to Jack in the airport in the previous episode. And, I mean, my wife didn't recognize him. And I, you know, we had just been watching the rerun of last week's episode, and I even pointed out that this random guy talks to Jack in the airport. And she still didn't recognize Caesar when she saw him at the beginning of the episode. So I thought that was kind of funny to kind of the way that they did that. They're just kind of introducing this character pretty roughly, I guess. We're just supposed to figure out, okay, those guys were on the plane, or just kind of remember their faces, I guess. Alex the Other has a good point that maybe the person that Caesar's the proxy for, or at least kind of taking the role of after he's now on the island, he's sort of like the Jack of 316, because he's keeping all of the information that he gains from everybody else. Although I would say that pretty much almost everybody on the show keeps the information from everybody else, but still, that's a good point. He and Alana, I guess, are sort of acting as leaders. The next thing that I've got in my notes is that Alana says that Roxanne was doing some scouting. So we learn a name of one of the other people who was on the flight. Roxanne was scouting, saw a man standing in the water, someone who wasn't on the plane, or at least, well, of course, that's what Roxanne thought. Surprise, surprise, that man turns out to be John Locke, and he's alive again on the island. Locke ended up taking off his shoes that Jack had gone to the trouble to give him and put on his feet and all that. And Alana is talking to Locke on the beach and says that the pilot and some woman took a boat and took off during the night. And that was kind of weird. Like, who is this woman that's going with the pilot? I mean, presumably she knows that, you know, that Frank Lapidus is the pilot. She would recognize him. He'd be in his pilot gear, his pilot, you know, uniform at that point. But who is this woman? That's one of the questions that, you know, that we have at that point. Also, this kind of made me wonder, are they the ones who shot at Sawyer and the other people on the boat, Juliet, et cetera, during the period after they found the Jira bottle, when they were flashing, you know, several times all over the place through time? They found an Jira bottle, so that seems to indicate that this was after 316 came to the island, and then they went out on their boat, and then they started getting shot at by somebody who had one of the other canoes. So, you know, who was that was shooting at them? It sort of seems like it might be people from 316. They, you know, maybe they're assuming that these people are bad guys or something because they stole one of their boats. As for why exactly nobody was at the beach when they came to take the boat, though, you know, that doesn't seem to be explained. You know, and I don't know, it wouldn't make much sense to me for Frank Lapidus to be shooting at them unless he just didn't know who they were. But even then, it doesn't really add up for Frank to be the one shooting at them. So probably what happens is that it's some of the 316 survivors in another boat that end up shooting at them. Diesel 929 says, so did Juliet kill Caesar? Who knows yet? And Alex the Other says, no, just the 316 red shirt. Diesel says, maybe the ghost of Naomi came to Frank. Oh, wow. I really, really like that theory. That's amazing. Obviously, there are a lot of people who die and then come back on the island. So that could be the case. I really like that idea. All right. So Locke and Alana, in their conversation, Locke asks, do you have a passenger list? And Alana says, you'll have to talk to Caesar. And that's where they leave us off with the island plot until the very end of the episode. And I don't think I put it in my notes later on, but basically Caesar says that I think he says that the pilot had the manifest. So, and of course, you know, we know that the pilot took off. So they don't have any way to look up the names of the people who were on the flight. So the rest of this episode up until the end is a flashback. We find out basically, again, as I mentioned, the beginning of Locke's journey off of the island all the way until his return. We start out with Locke waking up in Tunisia and barfing some stuff, you know, just kind of like Ben did when he wound up in Tunisia. And there are some cameras that are on Locke, and we find out shortly what the deal is with those. John is picked up by some folks who don't speak English. They take him to have surgery performed on his legs, or I guess on his one leg anyway, the one that was broken. And who other than Matthew Abaddon happens to be there when they're performing surgery on John? So that was a bit of a surprise. I wasn't really sure we'd ever see him again, especially considering that same actor was, you know, is now on Fringe. You know, he's on another regular series. So I thought it was really great that they got the actor to come back for this episode. My wife pointed out maybe that's one of the reasons why it seems like Fringe always, they skip like every other week. It's not on, you know, consistently every week. So they perform surgery on John, and when John wakes up, Widmore then is there, and he introduces himself to John. John doesn't recognize him, and he introduced himself as Charles Widmore, and says, "I met you when I was 17. And he asks John how long ago that was, and he said, it was 4 days ago. And Widmore says that he placed those cameras there because that's the exit. Now, that point sort of was interesting to me because if we look at Ben, when Ben left the island, he seemed to be, like, really in the middle of nowhere. At least there seemed to be other things around where Locke ended up, but maybe that was only because, you know, that's what Charles Widmore did. You know, after he found out where Ben jumped to in Tunisia when he arrived, maybe at that point that's when he set up the camera. So it was after Ben had come back from the island. Alex, the other, said that it looks like the exact same spot. So that's the exit point. I guess no matter where the island is floating around to, you always wind up in the same spot in Tunisia for some reason. And that also, that does make sense when you consider in the context of the polar bear that Charlotte found when she was excavating in Tunisia. Let's see, Widmore. Oh, and actually, Diesel has a good thought before I continue. He says, I'm surprised Dharma hasn't built a station there. That's a good point. Widmore says that he and the others, he says he had been a leader of the others, and he says that we protected the island for decades, and then he exiled me, referring to Ben. And he says that he's going to help Locke to bring them back, the Oceanic Six, and presumably other folks like Walt and maybe Frank. So Widmore says he's going to help Locke bring them back because there's a war coming. He says, because there's a war coming, John, and if you're not back on the island when that happens, the wrong side is going to win. So we don't know who the different sides are in this war. I don't know if Widmore is referring to the war between him and Ben, or if he's referring to some different war. Do you have any thoughts on that, James? James 721 just called in.
Well, I think that the war is coming, or a war is coming. So,
right. He said there's a war coming.
It sounded like a war in the real world, not between Ben and Widmore.
That's interesting. I just kind of assumed that he was talking about some sort of, like, you know, war over the island. But you see, so you're thinking that he's talking about, like, a real world war and maybe not necessarily involving the island? Is that kind of what you thought it might be, James?
Sorry, yeah. That's the first thing that I thought, that it could be a problem, you know, a world, some sort of a situation in the world. However, it does make more sense that it's, you know, the war over who gains control of the island.
Yeah, that seems to make sense. Let's see here. Taking a look at my notes. He says, there's a war coming, John, and if you're not back on the island when that happens, the wrong side is going to win. So I'm sure we'll get more of that in the coming episodes. Widmore gives him the name Jeremy Bentham, so that's where it comes from. And he teases Locke about, you know, how his parents must have had a sense of humor when they named him. And so he decided to take the same liberty when he named John Locke. Of course, you know, John Locke and Jeremy Bentham are both philosophers, real world, you know, philosophers. The first stop, Matthew Abaddon is going to, you know, to be Locke's driver, his escort, you know, his helper on his journey and trying to get people to go back to the island. And the first stop that Locke makes is in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic. And Locke visits Saeed there and isn't successful in getting Saeed to come back to the island. He then goes to New York City, and he visits Walt there. And he doesn't try to talk Walt into going back at all. And he tells Matthew Abaddon that the boy's been through enough, and I only need to convince one. And as Locke is getting back in the car, we see Ben watching from a distance, kind of keeping a safe distance. So he's watching, and he knows that Matthew is involved with John at this point. And so he knows that Charles Widmore has somehow connected with Locke. The next stop on Ben's tour is Santa Rosa, California, and of course, that's where he meets Hurley, and Hurley is surprised when he discovers that Locke is not dead and that he actually is really there in a wheelchair. And Hurley tells Locke that, you know, Hurley kind of gets freaked out because he sees Matthew Abaddon watching, and Locke goes, oh, it's okay, that's my driver. And Hurley starts panicking and tells Locke that guy is evil. He says that Matthew Abaddon claimed to have been employed by Oceanic Air. And if you remember back, we saw an episode about that. I think it was last season, season four. There was an episode where we first saw Matthew Abaddon. That was the encounter that Hurley had with him when he claimed to be an Oceanic Air representative but didn't have his business cards with him. And Diesel says he should have stayed in the car. But I was really surprised when Locke went back to the car, he didn't start yelling at Matthew and saying, you moron, you know, what are you doing? Why did you lie to Hurley? What's your problem? You know, are you sabotaging me? Like, didn't you know that Hurley was going to panic when he saw you? And I was really shocked when Locke didn't have that conversation with him. And James has an interesting point in the chat. It seems Locke should have been more believing to Hurley's warning about Abaddon. Now, so James, so you're on the side that Ben was telling the truth and that Abaddon was the bad guy. Is that right?
Well, Ben is always teasing. He's got such a character, you want to believe him, but he's always lying. It's funny, you know, Hurley is in the mental institution, but I'm pretty sure that John Locke doesn't believe that he's crazy. He just is as much surprised about these strange happenings of the island. So I think, you know, Locke should have paid a little more attention to Hurley instead of his driver, Abaddon.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory. I don't know. Like, after watching this episode, I started to wonder if maybe, you know, Charles Widmore isn't the bad guy that we, you know, keep getting the impression that he is. I mean, they really throw a lot of curveballs at us, you know, kind of detailing the little bits and pieces that we get of the story of Ben versus Widmore. And we always see them portray themselves as the victim, you know, I'm the good guy, he's the bad guy, and that's just the way it is. So it's kind of funny how they both sort of point the finger at each other and say, no, that guy's, you know, terrible, everything that he does is bad. When, you know, we know that they're both, that neither one of them seems to be a very good person, you know, based on everything that we've seen from them. And of course, we've seen a lot more of Ben. We know a lot more about, you know, how terrible of a person Ben is. But Charles Widmore seems to be a pretty nasty guy, too. So it's hard to believe either one of them. But so I'm not sure whether who to trust at this point, if anybody. You know, it's really, really hard to say. But yeah, I don't know. After watching this episode, I'm a little bit more inclined to believe Charles Widmore, personally. Anybody. Sorry, say it again.
Something tells me that Ben is the protagonist here. Widmore seems to use his money to get what he wants. Bad thing that we've seen about Widmore when he was having that gentleman beaten up in the alleyway way back, I guess, around when...
Right, it was quite a while ago.
Yeah. I believe that Widmore is the bad man. Or, you know, Ben is, not that great either, but...
I think they're both bad, but maybe one of them is not as bad as the other. Or maybe they're both equally bad and both, you know, just terrible liars, but I don't know. So the next stop on Locke's tour is Los Angeles, California. He goes to talk to Kate and fails to convince her. His next stop, he tells Matthew that he wants to go visit Helen. And so they go to Santa Monica, California, and Locke goes to visit Helen, and it turns out she's buried. She's in a graveyard. She died of a brain aneurysm, and her birth date is June 30th, 1957, and date of death is April 8th, 2006. And Abaddon points out, you know, well, she would have died anyway, even if you had stayed with her. You know, but this is her destiny. This is how it was supposed to be. Your destiny is to go back to the island. And as they're kind of getting ready to get back in the car, someone shoots and murders Matthew. We later find out that person was Ben. And so as Locke starts to panic, you know, he doesn't know what's going on. He just knows that Matthew just got murdered right there next to him. And so he takes off in the car. He gets in an accident. And he's taken to Jack's hospital. So we see, you know, Jack come in to talk to Locke, and they have a very heated, very angry conversation, and not surprisingly, Locke fails to convince Jack. And by the way, you know, Kate was not very nice to Locke. She basically, you know, said that, you know, that he was just the same person as he was when he was, you know, a desperate, you know, obsessed person who was following after Helen. And she says, oh, and look how much you've changed, or something like that, you know. And Jack was even nastier to Locke. I mean, he was just downright mean in the way that he talked to him. And Locke tries to convince Jack by saying, you know, your dad sent me. I saw your dad on the island, Christian Shepherd. And Jack doesn't believe him, but nevertheless, we find out that, you know, a little bit later, that maybe Locke did have some influence over Jack. The next scene is Locke basically has given up. He writes the suicide note to Jack. He starts to hang himself, and then there's a knock at the door, and it's Ben. Ben says, "I'm trying to protect you." That's one of the first things that he says to Locke. So, big jerk and liar. And Ben admits to killing Abaddon and claims that Abaddon would have killed Locke. He says that Widmore and Abaddon are extremely dangerous. And Ben tells Locke that Jack booked a round-trip flight from L.A. to Sydney. And so he tells Locke, you know, don't kill yourself. You did do your job. You got Jack to want to go back. And Locke then tells Ben that there's a woman named Eloise Hawking that they need to find. And, you know, as soon as this happens, pretty much, Ben kills Locke. He strangles him, you know, with the same cord that Locke was going to hang himself with. And so that part of that scene brings up a whole bunch of questions. Among them, you know, how did John know about Eloise Hawking? Because I don't think we ever had any instance before that where we saw John know anything about Eloise Hawking, unless maybe that was something that he picked up from his brief conversation with Richard Alpert. But that seems unlikely, just because of how short their conversations were. So how did John know about LOE talking? And then how did Ben know about LOE talking? I mean, it makes a little bit more sense because Ben tends to know a lot of things that, you know, nobody else knows, or at least none of the main characters. Ben obviously recognized her name, but apparently didn't know that she was nearby. But so we don't know how John knew about her, how Ben knew who she was, and I'm sure people could, you know, come up with some theories on this. I've got an idea or two. But why did Ben kill John? It just seems kind of wasteful, kind of nonsensical for him to come in and save John's life and act like, you know, like he was going to work with him and help him out, and then murder him, strangle him to death. The only thing that I can think, you know, my wife pointed out, well, of course he was getting information out of Locke, and that much is true. Obviously, you know, he wouldn't have known about Eloise Hawking had he not been there to save John's life when he did. Oh, that's right. Guest 6 points out in the chat that Christian told John. So did Christian actually mention the name Eloise Hawking? I'd forgotten that. And Bailey Bear confirms that.
Okay. So why did Ben kill John? The best theory that I can come up with on that is that that Ben, just like Charles Widmore said, Ben wants complete control of the island. He wants it for himself. And that would seem to indicate that Widmore might have been telling the truth. So this is the thing that, you know, I mentioned kind of after watching this episode that I'm a little bit more inclined to believe Charles Widmore. And that's one of the reasons why, because here Ben pretty much seems to prove that at least on some points, Charles was telling the truth. James has an interesting theory that maybe John is not allowed to kill himself. So maybe Ben did that for him. Maybe John wouldn't have been able to kill himself, kind of like the island keeping him alive kind of thing. The only thing is that, well, I don't know. I guess it's a little bit unclear because Richard Alpert doesn't say you're going to have to kill yourself. He just says you're going to have to die. And James says kind of per, you know, resurrection Bible reference kind of thing, like basically if you commit suicide, you know, that's a sin because you're taking a you know, a human life, you know, and I don't know. Well, anyway, I mean, I don't want to get too into religion because there's lots of different philosophies about, you know, suicide and resurrection and things like that. But and who knows, you know, what all the writers subscribe to. The only one I know, you know, that's pretty clear from the official Lost podcast is Damon is apparently Jewish. And anyway, and Diesel99 says, but the island is cool with him killing all sorts of other people. Yeah, well, there's certainly a lot of people who die brutally or get killed by somebody on the island. We've seen that happen a number of times, including, of course, John Locke killing his own dad on the island, or, well, having Sawyer do it for him, you know. That's a good point. James brings up something that had come to mind, too, but I didn't write down in my notes, is that Ben may know that John is going to live anyhow, or in other words, that he's going to be resurrected on the island. Let's see. I'm just catching up with the comments in the chat here. Okay, so then Ben fixes up the apartment to make it look like a suicide. He takes Jin's ring, and we find out later why he did that. Basically, he was going to do the opposite of what Locke said that Jin wanted him to do, which was to convince Sun to go back to the island after all. And as he's leaving, he says, I'll miss you, John. I really will. So Ben is pretty much twisted and just pretty much sick, I think. That line, by the way, I guess sort of seems to contradict the idea that maybe Ben knew that Locke was going to come back to life on the island. So back on the island, this is at the end of the episode. Caesar says that Hurley and some of the others from the plane disappeared while they were watching them. So there was this kind of bright flash, and Hurley and obviously Kate and Jack just disappeared right before their eyes. And kind of, this is really interesting to me. So it seems as though what happened here was that they went back in time. You know, based on the fact that they see Jin in this Dharma outfit with a shiny, brand-new-looking Dharma bust, and Jin's in a brand-new-looking Dharma jumpsuit and all that kind of thing. So it seems as though Jack and Kate and Hurley, at least, went back in time somehow. And they somehow wound up, you know, completely unharmed and just lying in, you know, various places. Not a single scratch on them, even though they had just fallen from an airplane that was nowhere to be seen. So all of that is very odd, but, I mean, obviously they're the main characters, and so this is maybe just a deus ex machina, kind of, there's not really any good explanation, perhaps, just that the island saved them so that they could, I don't know, because they were important to the island, I don't know, something to that effect, I guess. Just something that we're going to have to suspend disbelief about, I suppose. Bailey Bear had a good point that the plane actually is on the Hydra Island. That's true. There's a screen cap. Let me see if I put it in my notes here. No, let's see. Oh no, here it is. This comes from Sledge website. I'll paste a link there for you, and I'll of course put it in the show notes. But yeah, that's actually true, and I'll read a little excerpt from that article because it is pretty interesting. They say tonight we saw John Locke talking with Caesar and the other survivors of Ajira Flight 316. We saw from the wreckage of the plane that they crashed on the small island that houses the Hydra station. I didn't even notice the wreckage from the plane, so that must have been while I was typing notes or something. But they say the station appears to be abandoned, and if Locke and company are indeed in the same time as Jack, Kate, and Hurley during Dharma's heyday, then why would the Hydra be abandoned? The answer, John Locke and company, including Frank and Son, crashed on the present-day island while Jack, Kate, and Hurley flashed to the island's past. So here they're theorizing that the woman who went with Frank Lapidus might have been Sun. But I guess really more to the point, they're saying, and it makes a lot of sense to suggest this, that the people who are with Locke, you know, Alana and Caesar and the pilot, that they are in present time. They're in a period of time when the Hydra is abandoned, and so that indicates that they must be in the present or in the future. And that seems to make a lot of sense. Whereas we know, of course, that at the very least, Jack, Kate, and Hurley are definitely in the past because of, as I pointed out, the evidence with Jin showing up. Yeah, Diesel asked a good question. So why didn't Sun flash? How come only certain people went to the past and certain others? I mean, Locke, you know, he's an important guy, and somehow he stayed in the present. And, you know, so what's the deal with some of them going back to the past and some of them staying in the present? That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, at least on the surface. And, you know, maybe there will be some explanation to that, but it just seems sort of random that certain ones were picked to go back in the past and certain ones didn't. Bailey Bear asks, so where's Saeed? That's a good point too. My guess, since we haven't seen Saeed, I would imagine that we would have seen Saeed by now if he was with Ilana and Caesar, especially since Ilana is supposed to be in charge of making sure that Saeed doesn't escape, you know. For whatever reason, she seems to be sort of like the marshal. And Saeed probably has handcuffs on. My wife pointed out that even though we don't see Saeed's handcuffs, he's kind of got a coat or something over the top of him, sort of like Kate did, which I guess they do so that people don't get freaked out when they see somebody in cuffs on an airplane. Diesel says, Alana and Caesar need to cross paths with the Medusa spider. I kind of feel like this is a little bit forced, introduction of new characters, kind of like Nikki and Paolo were. But I'm assuming that they're going to be necessary for some reason or another. if for no other reason than just to sort of give us, you know, other survivors to have conversations with Locke or something. Okay, let's see. Another thing that Caesar said is that there were some people, in addition to the people who disappeared and the people on the beach, there were some people who got hurt, is how he puts it. And Caesar takes John to go look at those people upon John's request. And sure enough, one of the people who got hurt is Ben. And Locke says, "This is the man who killed me." So that's going to be interesting how, you know, Locke is obviously going to be pretty ticked off at Ben. And it sort of seemed like with Ben's line, "I'm going to miss you, I really am, or whatever, that he wasn't necessarily expecting John Locke to come back to life when he came back to the island. I think that's a surprise to Ben, even though, I don't know, even though Ben seems to know so much and he was pointing out the painting with the resurrection reference and everything else, I kind of don't think that Ben knows that Locke is going to be alive on the island. So I think that's going to be a bit of a surprise to him. James 721 mentions in the chat, Caesar might be Widmore's spy or a free agent. And, you know, I, at the beginning of the episode, I was kind of thinking the same thing. Like, it just seemed sort of odd how Caesar and Alana both seem to know so much about this island already. It's strange how they didn't show us anything from, like, you know, them waking up on the beach at all. The episode just starts out with Caesar in the Hydra station. And it was very confusing because, you know, you're wondering, is this a flashback? What is going on? Like, and soon enough we figure out that this is, okay, this is present time. They've crashed. But how did they find the station? Why is it that they're inside the station rummaging around in drawers and whatever else? That's just, the whole introduction of the episode was very confusing and strange. And I sort of thought at first that Caesar and Alana were sort of in cahoots, that maybe there was some reason that they came to the island and that maybe they came there on purpose. But at the same time, I mean, I guess by this point, I guess we're supposed to assume that they sort of formed some sort of, you know, relationship as, you know, people who survived Flight 316. And I think that's kind of what we're supposed to assume about them, not necessarily that they're conspiring together, especially with the thing with Caesar hiding the gun, you know, not telling Alana that he found a gun. That was a bit suspicious. But, you know, nevertheless, they seemed super, you know, friendly with each other for having kind of barely known each other. And so at the beginning of the episode, at least, I kind of thought that maybe Alana and Caesar were both Widmore spies. That thought did cross my mind, too. All right. Well, I think that's almost it. There are a couple other little screenshots and Easter eggs. I'll put up a link to some screenshots of what Caesar found in the Hydra station. He found Danielle Rousseau's map and one of Danielle's journal pages that concern time travel. I think I mentioned that before. Also, there's an interesting picture of Saeed's shirt, which says on it, "Build Our World." That's the yellow shirt that he was wearing. And so I guess it must be some sort of, like, project, you know, for building homes for people who can't afford them or something to that effect. It's kind of interesting, though, that it's in English. And, of course, he's in a country where Spanish is the primary language. But maybe it's an international organization or based in, you know, who knows, United States or something. Oh, Diesel reminds us about Walt's dream. Walt, when he was having a conversation with John, he says, "I saw you on the island. You were wearing a suit, and everyone was angry with you." So I wonder what the deal is going to be with that. It sort of makes sense why people, the other survivors of 316, would be angry with him, because they probably don't trust him. I mean, here's this guy who says, "Oh, yeah, I was dead. You know, I was a dead guy on the plane, and now I'm back to life." And they're like, "Okay,
you're lying because we didn't see you on the plane. So what's the truth? You know, stop fibbing to us about this. And so I can definitely see him getting mad at John about that, claiming that he, you know, came back from the dead and that he really was on the plane. Diesel poses the idea that maybe Ben makes them all turn on John. That's interesting, too. I wouldn't be surprised about that. In fact, I think that's actually a great theory because, once again, you know, Ben is going to be, if, you know, presumably Ben wants the island all to himself. He wants to be the leader. He's jealous of John. He's tried to kill him, you know, before, and he successfully killed him now in this episode. And so, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if maybe Ben turns them on John. I could see that happening. I think that's a great theory. James says in the chat, kind of in relation to that, maybe Walt's dream was a reference to Caesar questioning Locke. And Diesel says, or something more sinister to come. So a lot of great thoughts on that. I think that about does it for screenshots, Easter eggs, and all that kind of stuff. Diesel929 asks, where is Vincent? You know, I think... I'm not 100% sure, but I kind of was assuming that Vincent might be with wherever Rose and Bernard are. He's probably with them because, you know, on the official podcast, you know, they've said Rose and Bernard are not dead, and Vincent is, you know, one character that we promise you will be there at the end of the show. So I don't think that's too spoilery because who really cares all that much about Vincent? But, so, you know, obviously we haven't, and we didn't see Rose and Bernard die, so maybe Vincent is somewhere with them. James also points out that maybe Vincent could be at the temple with Richard's people. I guess it's a possibility, too, although it seems to me like he'd be more likely to hang out with the people that he knows, the Flight at 15 survivors. All right, well, I don't really have much in the way of spoilers for next week. I only saw one thing in the preview, and it didn't really show a whole lot. Basically, the one item that I saw in the preview was that Sawyer and Juliet had guns, and that's not really a big surprise. There was somebody with a bag over her head. It seemed to be a woman with, like, maybe blonde hair, curly, something like that. I don't know if it could have been Eloise, maybe. And they pulled the bag off of a woman's head. And those are the two things that I really caught in the preview, and that's about it. So not like I said, not much in the way of spoilers there from the preview. A lot of times they really spoil us. I mean, the preview that they showed us last week showed, you know, Locke standing on the table and Ben kneeling. And that was a little bit much, I thought, for showing in a preview. But you know, this week I don't think they really gave away any major clues as to what's going to happen next week. Let's see. James suggests maybe it could be Juliet or Libby. That would be cool. Diesel says I guess he actually said first in the chat, Libby maybe. I got a Libby vibe, but who knows? They didn't really show much. Now that would really shock me if that was Libby. But just in case it happens, I'm going to go ahead and throw that in my show notes. I like that idea. So good theory, Diesel. I think we're pretty clear that Libby died, but I guess she could have been resurrected or something. You never know. I mean, John Locke can be resurrected, right? So presumably other people could be too. Even if they're kind of following, like paralleling the resurrection in the Bible. Like after Jesus was resurrected, there were other people who had been in the graves who were also resurrected after that. And so maybe John being a savior of the island, now that he's been resurrected, other people can be too. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe that's a little bit too religious of a parallel. I don't know if they'd get that deep. But and if anyone wants to know the title for the next episode, not much of a spoiler either. It's a French title, and it's La Fleur, which means, I believe, the flower. So, again, not a whole lot in the way of spoilers, but if you do want to be spoiled, you can always go to Spoiler Fixed lost.php, and there are some various spoilers that you can find there. Just glancing through it without looking too hard at it, it looks like maybe they talk about some of the characters we'll see next week. Also, I guess there was one other little screen cap thing that's kind of interesting. Let me paste this in the chat there. This also comes from SledgeWeb's Lost stuff, and there's an issue of Life magazine that Caesar comes across in the Hydra station. And on the cover, I couldn't really tell what it was when I was watching the episode, but they've got some good shots of it, so it's a lot more clear. The cover of it, of this issue of Life magazine, it's from April 19th, 1954, and there's an illustration of what the caption says is the awesome fireball. And it says on the cover, color pictures of hydrogen tests. And so it seems as though this is like testing of a hydrogen bomb. And, of course, we know that Daniel Faraday had just, you know, given them some advice on burying, you know, the hydrogen bomb. Diesel says, so is there going to be a resurrection of those people on the bottom of the lagoon Hurley was drowning in? That would be really nasty. You know, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, with all the jokes about the zombie season on the official podcast, they can never let that go. That's like their big thing, like their big, you know, running gag is that there's going to be a zombie season 7, and then for those who don't listen to the podcast, you have to listen to it. If you listen to any Lost podcast, you really should listen to that one first and foremost. And unless, you know, you consider that to be spoilery, but there was somebody who wrote in recently and said, we know what's going on. This is going to be the real zombie season. And anyway, so I thought that was kind of funny. Well, I think that'll about do it for this week. We came in right about an hour by the time I edited out all the silence where I was referring to notes and reading the chat and looking things up. So pretty good episode tonight. Kept it fairly short. So that's a good thing because I'm tired. It's almost midnight here. And I know many of you, it's a lot later there, so I appreciate you staying up late to participate in the chat. So good night, everybody, and hopefully I'll see you all next week. And for those who don't or haven't yet participated live, or if it's been a while, you know, I would love to have you come and participate in the live chat. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people have really great theories, and a lot of times they occur to you right as we're discussing things in the podcast. So come and participate and contribute to the collective brain of the people who call in and listen in live to the podcast. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Until then, stay lost and namaste.
If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.